Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Boys are mellow as a honeydew. Yeah.
That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today in the studio, we have a good buddy of mine, Robert Newton, chef owner of Seersucker in the lovely Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thanks, man. Nice to be here.
I'm glad we have you on the show. So, you've been a very busy man for the last couple of years. You've got this great place, Seersucker, Southern-inspired, all domestic, when it's pretty much strictly all everything.
100%.
100%. Cool. Yeah. Domestic, American products. Now, you started out this place, Seersucker. You've got your food, your wine, and beer. And just recently, you got your full liquor license. So that's opened up a whole new
can of worms.
Yeah. And it's really cool. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the inspiration before we get into the drinks and a little bit about the food and the whole like culture,
totally.
This local and domestic American vibe.
Well, I'm really into that. You know, it's if you and I were doing this lovely show in, I don't know, Rome right now. When we get done with this show, if we were going out in Rome, we'd probably have Italian food. You know, we'd probably have Italian wine, and we'd probably have some foods that were grown locally. So I just wanted to take that idea and do the American thing with it and do the right thing with it and treat the ingredients properly and seasonally and use things that are close by. And the natural extension of that was my wine list should be all American. That's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And by extension, when we got into spirits, we did the same thing. And all the products I use in terms of food, they're all American based as well, from olive oil to, you know, peppercorn and stuff like that. Not so much because that's a little more difficult.
Right.
But all the food for sure.
Cool. And now this comes from your background in first of all, you've been cooking for a while, but you're from where we found out.
We're neighbors. Earlier,
we're neighbors. We're old state neighbors.
You're from Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm from Oklahoma, which is great. So you've got in your on your menu, you've got all these really awesome kind of spins on Southern classics. Which absolutely. Anyone that's from the South, there's so many transplants from the South in New York City that, you know, this is extremely welcome, you know.
It's like catnip, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when you find a bar that has Lone Star in it, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, right. Totally.
I'm never leaving.
Or Dixie.
Or, yeah,
black
exactly.
and voodoo lager.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
So talking about the food here then, what are some of your favorites as far as the classics? You know, like when we talk about classic Southern food, obviously you've got your fried chicken, which is amazing.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk little bit about the other
classic stuff in terms of Southern food. I mean, we do Hoppin' John year round. It's not just for New Year's Day. Hmm. And I do Hoppin' John fried rice. So I take the idea of Hoppin' John and put it all into a fried rice. So you still get the rice, you still get the beans, you still get the cheddar. I do tomatoes in the summertime, obviously, but we take that the ingredients and kind of turn it on its head and turn it into a fried rice, and we deglaze the pan with red eye gravy, which you don't really see very often in Hoppin' John. But you always got the pork product there, and I figured why not bring that soy sauce, umami kind of vibe to a really cool dish and then top it off with cheddar. We use field peas from South Carolina instead of black-eyed peas, and the rice is from South Carolina. So we're trying to do the right thing and respect the ingredients. You know?
Even your soy sauce is from that. It's like the totally. Barrel-aged people.
Kentucky, man, yeah.
That's amazing. And like we were talking the other day, they actually have an all vegetarian Worcestershire sauce. So
yeah, which you turned me on to. I knew that they did that, but I didn't realize it didn't have anchovies in it. Which I got to get my hands on that.
Yeah, for the vegan Bloody Mary drinkers out there.
Totally.
So one of my other favorite things that you have on your menu is, I mean, it's hard for me to not order the fried chicken every time.
I hear you,
but
a lot of people feel that way.
But I mean, the catfish is awesome too. And I like going there for brunch, man. I like grits.
Yeah, grits. We had shrimp and grits for a long time, and I've just moved on. Doesn't mean I don't love shrimp and grits, but I just moved on to other explorations with shrimp. And going back to the catfish, I mean, catfish is something I grew up catching.
Yeah, me
you
too.
Did probably
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, learn how to clean my own and cook my own. And but then also down south, there's catfish houses everywhere.
Right.
You know, and I grew up, that's why I was a fat little kid, you know, just eating fried catfish all the time. But I wanted, you know, that the dish that we do is, it's an iceberg slaw with celery seed vinaigrette. And that dish sort of really encompasses what I'm, what I personally am trying to do with my southern food and my and seersucker. It's just kind of lighten it up, you know, without stripping it of its soul. So
right.
If you and I were in Mountain Home, Arkansas, where I'm from tonight, and we go to Fred's Fish House, we get fried catfish with French fries and hush puppies and like a slice of onion. And I just wanted to lighten it up. It doesn't mean I don't love French fries, but I just want to bring some balance. So we have the fried catfish. I do it classically, cornmeal crust. But then I serve it with a little slaw and lighten it up. Almost kind of like taking a page from the Vietnamese. You know, they have something fresh and crispy with something, some of the fried. A little spicy mayonnaise, homemade hot sauce, homemade mayonnaise.
Yeah, how do you guys make your, I mean, don't give me any
the
secrets, but yeah.
Oh, chili de arbol.
Yeah?
And organic tomatoes, vinegar, salt. Really, really straightforward. No funny business.
And you guys use that in your michelada.
Absolutely.
During brunch, which I think is awesome, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
with
you,
Dixie.
And you use Dixie.
Yeah, totally.
So cool. So, as far as, like, I don't think we've ever talked about how you got into this. Was it because of like cleaning your catfish and like cooking them yourself? I mean, like, what got you into this
food?
Yeah,
like back in the day. I mean, I guess it was my family. You know, my dad grew up on a farm where they killed their own hogs, and my dad made his own hams and made their own bacon. And you know, they killed hogs in December when it got cold, and then obviously I didn't really grow up like that. We had a garden, so we grew our own corn and. You know, we didn't make cornmeal like my dad did, but my dad grew up in that environment out of necessity, and then he brought some of that to my family traditions, if you will. So I was exposed to like canning in the summer and picking green beans and making our own tomato sauce that we put up for the wintertime. And I wouldn't say that I grew up in a foodie family by any shot, but food was really important and really focal, and I knew good food from day one.
Yeah.
So it just sort of happened organically. I went, you know, went to college and all that stuff, but it just, I just sort of gravitated toward food and decided to go to culinary school. And I went to culinary school in 95, and there was no Food Network. There was none of that business. And not there's anything wrong with the Food Network, but I just, you know, the image you had of a chef in 1995 was like the fat guy drinking brandy, smoking a cigarette and like being kind of a sloth. And I didn't even know there's culinary schools, and so I started to look into it.
Yeah.
One thing led to another, and I wound up in New York in 97 working at Le Cirque and just kind of went from there.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important because, especially since you're doing so many, like, awesome, like, especially, like, all the pickled vegetables.
Yeah.
And you grew up with that garden. It's like, you can taste the difference, you know, when you taste good vegetables that...
Absolutely.
You know, and I know you get a lot
it's
of
seasonal.
Stuff. Yeah, and you get a lot of stuff from the farmer's market that comes through, too, right?
Yeah, man, it's right, you know, I could throw a baseball on Sundays and hit people, hit the farmers, which I wouldn't want to do, but,
I mean, that's,
you know, at the end of the day, when you talk about seasonality and you, if you know how to cook and you have like a genre you want to stay within, and I like to stay within Southern food, you know, once you know how to cook and once you know what it is you want to say about food, then you can just kind of let the seasons take over.
Yeah.
You know, when sunchokes come around, I do crispy sunchokes. That's what I'm into. When Brussels sprouts are here, I hit them with bacon fat, and red wine vinegar. That's tasty.
Yeah.
Whenever tomatoes are here, you do tomatoes and like basil and mint or whatever herb you want, and you just kind of let the seasons take the lead. And then you just like I choose to interpret that through a southern lens. That's just kind of what I'm into.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is a really
and it's part of my heritage, my life.
Yeah,
you know, what
of
I mean?
Course,
it's not a fad.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, there are certain cuisines that call you can actually like pair cocktails with, and they're
southern
like,
food is one of them.
Southern food is definitely one of them.
Yeah,
I guess I really never thought of that before. I didn't put the two together because when I was living in Oklahoma, you know, growing up, I wasn't thinking about having a sorghum old fashioned, and I was you know
not really.
To go with
we're thinking
my,
about stealing beer from the
yeah
I'm gonna go steal beer from the restaurant I work in and not get caught because I'm 15 or whatever
exactly yeah. But I mean. Especially, you know, like when you think about corn, then you think about like bourbon, and you know when you think about like the sorghum,
moonshine.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. We're talking about so many things that just naturally over time have kind of come together or come from one of those products, you know.
Yeah.
And
The things that are grown there.
The things that are grown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's when we start talking about your moonshines and like your like sugar wash whiskeys and things like this. I mean, which is basically a rum, you know, but, you know, back in those days, they're basically distilling anything they get their hands on.
Anything has sugar around.
Yeah.
Totally.
So you naturally have all these cool ingredients, local ingredients that being cooked out in the woods in the middle of the night, turn them into alcohol. And I think that's really cool. When we started talking, when you were like, dude, I'm getting my liquor license, we started talking about cocktails. And I was like, man, this is going to be great. It's going to be really cool. Yeah. So some of the other things that you've done with the cocktail list. Well, first of all, let's go back to wine a little bit, too, because obviously you've got a lot of stuff from like upstate and Finger Lakes out Long Island. But you also have like your West Coast stuff.
Totally.
You know, I mean, there,
I got sparkling from New Mexico, sparkling from Virginia, you know, Kluge, which doesn't exist anymore, but I still have some of it.
Nice.
I'm just really...
You should sit on it, cellar it.
Yeah, it's going to be called Trump, right? yeah, it goes back to what we were saying before. I'm just committed to that ideal. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing for our wine industry and beer industry for that matter. And I think the next wave is going to be, you know, micro distilling. People like me and you deciding we want to make rum or deciding we want to make White Dog or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, the best way for us to advance the wine industry is to drink our own juice.
Get high on your own supply.
Yeah. So not every single wine from New York is great. But I got news for you. Not everyone from France is great either.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you just got to do your due diligence and get out there and taste and... There's enough good wine out there made in America and made in some not so often thought of wine hotspots that you can comprise a list that's interesting and tasteful. I have an awesome Lindberger from Fox Run out of the Finger Lakes. It's, you know, that's Blaufränkisch in Europe. So it's phenomenal. It's dark. It's funky. Not in a green asparagus, funky New York State wine kind of way, which some, you know, unfortunately sometimes happens. But I'm really... really committed to that, and I don't see any reason to do it any other way. It's the right thing to do for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's cool because, like, you know, there's so many things to choose from out there, and as far as like wine based, you know, you've got like Via Vermouth, which I know you use from Kuwaiti, Napa Valley, and you've got like all these like dessert wines and stuff that when you originally started putting some cocktails together with your list. You're using what you could use legally, beer and wine.
Yeah, yeah.
And you did really cool things with, like we talked about before, the Michelada with your house made hot sauce.
Yeah,
it's great. You know.
Yeah, and one of the things if you only have beer and wine, one of the things a lot of people do is you show you, and I just didn't have that luxury. You know, I couldn't do like a show you Bloody Mary because it's Korean as a rule. But yeah, once we got full liquor, it just kind of changed everything. And I, going back to my larger point, like I was committed to an American wine list and American beers and local foods as much as possible. And I just saw spirits as a natural extension of that. And I think micro distilling is going to be the next wave. I think it's going to be where micro brews and craft beers were in the 90s. You know, now everyone thinks that the threshold is going to be met where we can't take any more micro breweries. They're just not, you know, there's not enough market, but it's endless. You know, it's endless. And I think you're going to see the same wave of people making their own rum and making their own gin. And why not?
Yeah, you know? And especially now that in New York State, like to get a Class D license, I mean, it's a lot easier than it used to be.
It's like a farm act or something, right? You probably know more about than I do. Some kind of farming thing there.
Yeah.
Makes it easier.
Yeah, and you know, there are certain places like, you know, you've got like the New York Distilling Company. They even have a bar attached to it.
Yeah.
It's like impossible. It's hot.
It's super hot.
But
like the Brooklyn Gin and the Brooklyn Whiskey, and you know we're doing Brooklyn Republic Vodka, and there's, you know, there's Long Island Vodka from Long Island, obviously, and
100% potato. It's great.
Yeah, man. It's
that's old school.
How are you not going to use that?
Yeah.
Why not? You know.
And even
it's just where I'm coming from. Like I don't need to bring in, you know, vodka from Russia. It might be awesome, but. It's like bringing bottled water from Fiji. We don't use bottled water. We have our own filtration. We do our own sparkling. We do our own still. It's filtered in-house. We have our own bottles. It's just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Period. You know?
It's awesome. I mean, even, you know, like Tuttletown, those guys, I mean...
Super close, super awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great guys.
Absolutely.
Just up there last month. Yeah, there's so much more to choose from nowadays. And we're just, we've just covered New York State.
Yeah, yeah, totally. We did talk about High West.
Yeah.
You know?
We haven't even gotten into, like...
Kentucky.
Right. Which is what we're going to talk about. I think we should take a little quick break here. Uh-huh. And when we get back, let's, like, yeah, let's get into the cocktail.
Get into the bourbon conversation.
Yeah, cool, man.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back.
I'm the seventh son. Might be a third man, baby, but it's a fact I'm the seventh son. You could care less about me, but you'll care when I'm done. Let's have a ball and a biscuit and take a sweet time about it.
The following program has been brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery. Cain Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cain5.com.
And we're back. In the studio today, we have Robert Newton, chef owner of Seersucker Restaurant in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. We were just talking about the fact that Seersucker is 100% all-American products and ingredients, and everything down to the sorghum you're using to glaze.
Tennessee, baby.
And yeah, and you know, we were talking about the spirits right before we left for the break, and we've only covered New York, really. But I mean, when we think about, especially Southern American, we think about whiskey, man. We're thinking about bourbon.
Dude, bourbon's the first thing that pops in your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, at least.
Well, me too.
It's the most American. I mean, it's what's more American than that?
Yeah, exactly, man. Bourbon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously now we've got lots more to choose from now that we've moved out of New York State.
Yeah.
What are okay, so you've got, I know that you do have one of your cocktails. It's called the Reverend, and it has Elijah Craig. And Elijah Craig actually has been given props as, you know, the guy who basically invented bourbon whiskey as we know it today.
I think he's a reverend, right?
He was. That's why we went with it. The good reverend, Elijah
That's
Craig.
Make sure I got my facts right.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was storing bourbon, some whiskey that he had just cooked up in a barrel. Apparently, he was being very frugal and reusing a barrel because, you know, they would use barrels to store anything like corn, fish, you know, wheat, whatever it was. So he probably had some like pickles in it. He didn't want his whiskey tasting like pickle. But then we flash forward 300 years and we've got the Bushwick Country Club doing picklebacks. So who knows? That might have worked out. We might have had the pickleback way back.
Yeah,
but
yeah, the original pickleback.
The original pickleback. But so he chars the inside of the barrel, which is one of the rules with bourbon, and floats it down the Mississippi River for a long trip, and by the time we got to New Orleans, they're like, oh, this is delicious. Where does this come from? It's from Bourbon County.
It's a delicious flavor.
So we do have the good Reverend Elijah Craig to thank for that. This one, you're mixing it with black pepper and rhubarb bitters. I'm assuming the rhubarb bitters are from Fee Brothers out of Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Going back to New York there.
Yep.
So with that in mind, you know, you've really... And you've got the sorghum old fashioned, which is one we should
first
talk about.
First one we did, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing... Talk us through sorghum for a little bit.
Sorghum, man. I mean, I guess the long and short of it is sorghum is the maple syrup of the South. You know, maple trees don't grow down there. And molasses has its own, you know, really distinct, strong flavor, and it's very prevalent in the South. But sorghum, you know, it's not sugar-based at all. It comes from a grain, and you cook it up, make a syrup open pot, cook it down, you know, reduce it. It caramelizes and it gets a lot of body. And I think it's a little cleaner than molasses. I like molasses for certain applications.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong, but there's just something about sorghum. And, you know, it was on the table at my grandparents' house. It's like, oh, here's a biscuit and some butter. And yeah, I'm going to have some sorghum on that. And it's great with, you know, mixing it with butter and putting it on a pancake. But it also, it's good with pork because it's sweet. It's also good with cocktails because it's sweet and has a little funk to it. And that's how we wound up there. And
especially with Old Overholt Rye and the sorghum old fashioned, you know, which has like a big peanut grainy quality to it. We were just drinking some last week on the show with Nick Jarrett, but we were, of course, drinking Old Overholt from 1951.
Which is very different.
Which is very different. But still, it's still there. So I love the sorghum old fashioned. I think it's a really clever, like, Southern kind of twist on that. And,
yeah, it's just good and clean, man.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
It's how are you going to get more American than that?
It's old fashioned,
that's like,
man,
an American cocktail.
That's exactly
that's
right.
It, period.
It's like one of the, that's like the oldest cocktail. Well, because it,
yeah.
Yeah. But then you've got the Albuquerque cocktail. We were just talking about a Gruet out of New Mexico, which is where we get
totally
some pretty awesome sparkling wines. They do really amazing rosé too.
Absolutely, man. They do a really nice job. French owned, mm-hmm. French family, I believe, owns that.
How do they end up in New Mexico? That's weird.
Well, you know, I don't want anybody to take me to task on this, but I think they started in California and it wasn't working right. And somehow they wound up in New Mexico doing soil tests. And they go to a lot of work to make these wines there. They have to irrigate the water in because
yeah,
they had the right soil, but they didn't have enough irrigation. So they pump in water and they go to great lengths to make this product. And to my thinking, it's one of the premier sparkling wines in America.
Good.
I've had it from day one.
Yeah. That's actually kind of a cool point to make, especially with the whole, like, all-American thing. It's like...
You can't, like, say champagne, that one?
Well, no, not that. But I just remember, like, growing up on farms and, like, seeing how they would have to, like... You know, there's so many droughts in the South. Like,
totally.
You have to work really hard at making something grow in certain places. And I think that's pretty cool. Like, if you have the right soil, it's like, all right, let's bring in some water, man. Let's make this happen.
Yeah.
Everything else is lined up. We can bring water in, you know. I think that's very admirable. You know?
It's also a necessity back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had to do
you
it.
You had to, yeah. The Capote. You've got one with the Brooklyn Gin, Dry Vermouth, Herb Saint, and House Pepper Vinegar. Everyone knows that I love vinegar in cocktails.
Yeah.
So that one's really cool because... I mean, you've got kind of like a fourth degree, like a spicy fourth degree cocktail, or like a like the Obituary, which is also a classic, like, New Orleans cocktail, which is cool. And you've kept the Michelada on the list as well, which you're never going to take off.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. People get mad when you take stuff away from them.
Yeah. Oh, one of my other favorite cocktails you guys have is the Yankee.
I love the Yankee.
Which is cool.
So good.
Because you've got...
So good.
You've got the Berkshire rum, which people don't really think about, like, rum being produced in America, but there are several people producing it now. And actually, back in the day...
Back in the day, exactly.
Back in the day, there was a lot more rum being produced in the United States.
Yeah. The whole triangle thing.
Yeah. The triangle trade and everything.
Yeah.
And even, like, we talked about, we kind of touched on, like, when we were talking about moonshine, the whole, like sugar-washed whiskey. That's mm-hmm. basically a rum.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Different name.
Yeah.
You know?
I know you love Bitterman stuff, and
they've been on the show a couple times.
Yeah,
they're great.
Cool people, and they make a really good product, and they make an all-American cocktail program more doable than maybe it was before they were around. You know,
they
have a lot of Amaro-type things and bitters, obviously, and things that you can put into your arsenal to make mm-hmm. a really tasty all-American cocktail. So
yeah.
I'm happy to have them around.
I mean, and, you know, they're not stopping there. They're going to keep continuing.
Totally.
They're going to continue to make more and more things accessible.
Man.
Yeah, they very much so are. Of course, the Seelbach.
Hey, man.
She's one of the...
I wonder where that idea came from. I need to publicly thank you for that.
Oh, dude, no.
You sent us there. Carrie, my girlfriend, business partner, you sent us there. We were on a road trip home to see my mom in Arkansas for Thanksgiving. And we went to that hotel. It's a big, beautiful hotel, and I think we sat at the bar downstairs and had a Seelbach, and I thank you for that.
Awesome.
It's good stuff.
Are you using
that? We just did our own spin on it, yeah.
You using the Gruet in there?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of have to, right?
And then, totally. And I think the Brooklyn whiskey really, it's got a little harsher thing going on there in a good way that makes it good for that drink. You know, just kind of, it really comes through without running over it.
Yeah. And, you know, the Seelbach, it's such a, like, just good, clean, classic cocktail. It's got
simple,
tons
clean,
of bitters in it.
Totally.
But, yeah, it's
good across the board. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. So,
going back to the Capote, man. Like,
yeah.
That, now he's a son of the South. He's from Alabama.
Right.
But he also lived in Brooklyn.
And that's perfect.
So, I mean, this is Brooklyn gin, and it's from the South. I mean, it had to be done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's had to do it. So we're really proud of that one. Michaela, our director of operations, came up with that. And Carrie's really into Capote, so she named it. And
nice.
It was a collaboration, and it's delicious. So it's a win-win-win all across the board.
Absolutely. So now that we have, now that you have the cocktails going, like, what how, do you feel like your restaurant has kind of like come like full circle and like kind of like fleshed out?
Yeah, I mean, we'll be 2 years in May, which is, you know, restaurant milestone for new restaurateurs such as myself. It's really happening on its own. You know, when I opened up, we were doing coffee service in the morning. We were doing lunch. We were doing dinner. We were like 6 days a week. And
And now you have your coffee shop down the street.
Yeah, so
on
it's
the
all
same
changed.
Block.
You know, everything's just happening organically. All for the good. You know, thank goodness.
I love the Smith Canteen, which
totally.
You know,
it's a great shop
right there on the corner.
Yeah.
I don't know how you got that location. It's crazy. I don't know.
It happened organically, I guess they say. That's a tagline, I guess.
Yeah.
It just kind of fell in our lap because we had only been open at Seersucker for about 6 months, and a middle person came to us because they liked what we were doing at Seersucker and the way we run our restaurant. And nobody has any business planning to open a second restaurant in month 6 of their first one. And
well,
Carrie and I looked at each other.
They have ideas of it, but
yeah, but maybe it's not based in reality. So we're just like, we can't let that space go. It's a pharmacy from 1905. I mean, how are you going to say no to that?
It's beautiful in there, man.
You know? So we just doubled down, and you know, we just took everything we had, and we'd already taken everything we had to get Seersucker off the ground. It's a true labor of love, and we're really proud of it. And we just said, screw it, man. Let's double down and go all in. And, you know, I'm sitting here. We're still alive. So it's been fun, man. It's hard work, but I have no regrets. We're just kind of bobbing and weaving and making it all come together and trying to really, truly, at the end of the day, put out products that we believe in, create jobs for our friends and people that come our way in the neighborhood, and create some jobs for Brooklyn and just do the right thing.
Cool,
that's
man.
Really where we're at.
Great. Yeah. I have one last thing to talk to you about before
we
leave.
Oh no, I'm nervous.
Okay. No, don't. It's not a gotcha moment. Wait a minute. Jack, do you have the gotcha?
Do you have the hood?
That's the gotcha sound.
Yeah, that was it, right?
Thanks, Jack.
This guy.
That wasn't the boar. But now that you pointed that out, that would be kind of awesome.
Yeah. I can see his big cheek, man. We could really cure that up.
Yeah, totally. No, man, you have a little backyard space behind Seersucker.
Yeah.
Any plans with that? I mean, like, we were just talking about, like, growing gardens and pickling and stuff, man.
Well, the obvious thing is people want to have brunch out there.
Well, yeah, totally.
You know?
You could do both. A little bit of both.
I could do both. I mean, it's tricky. Brooklyn backyards are tricky, and we would love to do something out there. Obviously, we have the space, and we have plans to do something with it. We're just not entirely sure if we're going to try to go the route of serving food out there or just have it as a waiting room when people are waiting for tables. My latest thoughts are just to turn it into a garden, you know, and grow some stuff. Grow my own herbs, maybe put a pecan tree or something out there. We don't get a ton of light. The short answer is yes, we're going to do something. The long answer is
I'm not entirely sure
what it is yet, but we're going to do something.
Well, if it's anything like what you've been doing, I'm sure it's going to be incredibly amazing.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. So you got a website?
Totally. Yeah. Seersuckerbrooklyn.com.
Seersuckerbrooklyn. Yeah. Check that out.
SmithCanteen.com.
Smith Canteen. Two awesome places in the best neighborhood in Brooklyn.
No kidding, man. No kidding. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Right on.
And so go to Seersucker Brooklyn and Smith Canteen, and you will find yourself very happy. Get the fried chicken.
I say eat catfish.
All right, thanks, Rock.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Yes, he's high. Man, he's higher than